in the limelight.
The greed for hydrocarbon resources drives the U.S. to commit crimes against humanity by employing all terrorist plots, including sedition, economic sanctions, wars, and bloodshed. A joint article has been written in this regard by Tom Dispatch site, titled, "It's Always About the Oil." The authors are Michael Clare, a 5-college professor, Emeritus of Peace and World Security Studies at Hemisphere College and Senior Visiting Fellow at the Arms Control Association, and Tom Engelhardt. Stay tuned to hear more. What more did one need to know once U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo lied when he insisted that the suicide bombing in Kabul, Afghanistan, claimed by the Taliban, was Iranian-inspired or plotted pro-Iranian groups? In other words, the U.S. is looking for a fight with the Islamic Republic. It couldn't have made more sense once you thought about it. I don't mean Pompeo's claim itself, which was little short of idiotic, but what lurked behind it? I mean, the knowledge that only a week after 9/11 incidents in New York, Congress had passed an authorization for the use of military force, or AUMF, that allowed the president and any future president, as it turned out, to use all necessary and appropriate force against those nations, organizations, or persons he determines planned, authorized, committed, or aided the terrorist attacks that occurred on September 11, 2001, or harbored such organizations or persons. In other words, almost 18 years later, as Pompeo knows, if you can link any country or group, you're eager to go to war with Al-Qaeda. No matter how confected the connection, you can promptly claim authorization to do your damnedest to them. How convenient, then, should you be in the mood to make war on Iran, even if that country has no links with Al-Qaeda? Why? You wouldn't even need to ask Congress for permission to pursue your war of choice. And keep in mind that recently, Congress or a crew of corrupted, degraded Republican senators simply couldn't muster the votes or will to deny President Trump the power to make war on Iran without its approval. Let me hasten to add that the supposed link to Al-Qaeda isn't the only thing the Trump administration has conjured up to ensure that it will be free to do whatever it pleases when it comes to Iran. It's found various other inventive ways to justify future military actions there without congressional approval. Pompeo and crew have, in that sense, been clever indeed. As the Pentagon's perspective on climate change points out today, there is only one word largely missing from their discussions of the increasingly edgy situation in the Persian Gulf, the most obvious. But read him yourself if you want to understand just how, when it comes to Iran and that missing word, to steal a phrase from the late great Jonathan School, the fate of the earth is at stake. It's always the oil. While President Trump was hobnobbing with Saudi heir apparent Mohammed bin Salman at the G20 summit in Japan, brushing off a recent UN report about MBS's role in the murder of Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo was in Asia and the Middle East pleading with foreign leaders to support Sentinel, the aim of that administration plan, to supposedly protect shipping in the Strait of Hormuz and the Persian Gulf. Both Trump and Pompeo insisted that their efforts were driven by concern over Iran's influence in the region and the claim to ensure the safety of maritime commerce. Neither, however, mentioned one inconvenient three-letter word, OIL, that lay behind their Iranian maneuvering, as it has impelled every other American incursion in West Asia North Africa region since the Second World War. Now it's true that the United States of America no longer relies on imported petroleum for a large share of its energy needs. Thanks to the fracking revolution, the country now gets the bulk of its oil, approximately 75%, from the domestic sources. Key allies in NATO and rivals like China, however, continue to depend on West Asian oil for a significant proportion of their energy needs. As it appears, the world economy, of which the U.S. is the leading beneficiary, despite President Trump's self-destructive trade wars, relies on an uninterrupted flow of oil from the Persian Gulf to keep energy prices low. By continuing to serve as the principal overseer of that flow, Washington enjoys striking geopolitical advantages that its foreign policy elites would no more abandon than they would their country's nuclear supremacy. This logic was spelled out by President Barack Obama in a September 2013 address to the UN General Assembly, in which he declared that the United States of America is prepared to use all elements of our power, including military force, to secure our core interests in West Asia North Africa region. To some Americans, that dictum and its continued embrace by President Trump and Secretary of State Pompeo may seem anachronistic. True, Washington fought wars in West Asia when the American economy was still deeply vulnerable to any disruption in the flow of imported oil. In 1990, this was the key reason President George W. Bush gave for his decision to evict Iraqi troops from Kuwait after Saddam's invasion of that land. Our country now imports nearly half of the oil it consumes and could face a major threat to its economic independence, he told the nationwide TV audience. But talk of oil soon disappeared from his comments about what became Washington's first but hardly last Persian Gulf War after his statement provoked the widespread public outrage. No blood for oil became a widely used protest sign then. His son, the second President Bush, never even mentioned that three-letter word when announcing his 2003 invasion of Iraq. Yet, as Obama's UN speech made clear, oil remained and still remains at the center of U.S. foreign policy. Quick review of global energy trends helps explain why this has continued to be so. Despite all that's been said about climate change and oil's role in causing it, and about the enormous progress being made in bringing solar and wind power online, we remain trapped in a remarkably oil-dependent world. To grasp this reality, all you have to do is read the most recent edition of oil giant BP's Statistical Review of World Energy, published this June. In 2018, according to that report, oil still accounted for by far the largest share of world energy consumption, as it has every year for decades. All told, 33.6% of world energy consumption last year was made up of oil, 27.2% of coal, itself a global disgrace, 23.9% of natural gas, 6.8% of hydroelectricity, 4.4% of nuclear power, and a mere 4% of renewables. Most energy analysts believe that the global reliance on petroleum as the share of world energy use will decline in the coming decades as more governments impose restrictions on carbon emissions and as consumers, especially in the developed world, switch from oil power to electric vehicles. But such declines are unlikely to prevail in every region of the globe, and total oil consumption may not even decline. According to projections from the International Energy Agency in its new policy scenario, which assumes significant but not drastic government efforts to curb carbon emissions globally, Asia, Africa, and West Asia are likely to experience a substantially increased demand for petroleum in the years to come, which, grimly enough, means global oil consumption will continue to rise. Concluding that the increased demand for oil in Asia in particular will outweigh reduced demand elsewhere, the IEA calculated in its 2017 World Energy Outlook that oil will remain the world's dominant source of energy in 2040, accounting for an estimated 27.5% of total global energy consumption. That will indeed be a smaller share than in 2018, but because global energy consumption as a whole is expected to grow substantially during those decades, net oil production could still rise from an estimated 100 million barrels a day in 2018 to about 105 million barrels in 2040. Of course, no one, including the IEA's experts, can be sure how future extreme manifestations of global warming, like the severe heat waves recently tormenting Europe and South Asia, could change such projections. It's possible that growing public outrage could lead to far tougher restrictions on carbon emissions between now and 2040. Unexpected developments in the field of alternative energy production could also play a role in changing those projections. In other words, oil's continuing dominance could still be curbed in ways that are now unpredictable. In the meantime, from a geopolitical perspective, a profound shift is taking place in the worldwide demand for petroleum. In 2000, according to IEA, older industrialized nations, most of the members of the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, that is OECD, accounted for about two-thirds of global oil consumption. Only about a third went to countries in the developing world. By 2040, the IEA's experts believe that ratio will be reversed, with the OECD consuming about one-third of the world's oil and non-OECD nations the rest. More dramatic yet is the growing centrality of the Asia-Pacific region to the global flow of petroleum. In 2000, that region accounted for only 28% of world consumption. In 2040, its share is expected to stand at 44% thanks to the growth of China, India, and other Asian countries, whose newly affluent consumers are already buying cars, trucks, motorcycles, and other oil-powered products. Where will Asia get its oil? Among energy experts, there is little doubt on this matter. Lacking significant reserves of their own, the major Asian consumers will turn to one place with significant capacity to satisfy their rising needs, the Persian Gulf. According to BP, in 2018, Japan already obtained 87% of its oil imports from the West Asia-North Africa region, India 64%, and China 44%. Most analysts assume these percentages will only grow in the years to come as production in other areas declines. This will in turn lend even greater strategic importance to the Persian Gulf region, which now possesses more than 60% of the world's untapped petroleum reserves, and to the Strait of Hormuz, the narrow passageway through which approximately one-third of the world's seaborne oil passes daily. Bordered by Iran, Oman, and the United Arab Emirates, the Strait is perhaps the most significant geostrategic location on the planet today. When the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan in 1979, the same year that the Islamic Revolution overthrew the U.S.-backed Shah of Iran, U.S. policymakers concluded that America's access to Persian Gulf oil supplies was at risk and a U.S. military presence was needed to guarantee such access. As President Jimmy Carter would say in his State of the Union address on January 23, 1980, "The region, which is now threatened by Soviet troops in Afghanistan, is of great strategic importance. It contains more than two-thirds of the world's explorable oil. The Soviet effort to dominate Afghanistan has brought Soviet military forces to within 300 miles of the Indian Ocean and close to the Strait of Hormuz, a waterway through which most of the world's oil must flow. Let our position be absolutely clear. An attempt by any outside force to gain control of the Persian Gulf region will be regarded as an assault on the vital interests of the United States of America, and such an assault will be repelled by any means necessary, including military force," unquote. To lend muscle to what soon be dubbed the Carter Doctrine, the U.S. President created a new U.S. military organization, the Rapid Deployment Joint Task Force, that is RDJTF, and obtained basing facilities for it in the Persian Gulf region. Ronald Reagan, who succeeded Carter as president in 1981, made RDJTF into a full-scale geographic combatant command, dubbed Central Command or CENTCOM. Reagan was the first president to activate the Carter Doctrine in 1987 when he ordered Navy warships to escort Kuwaiti tankers, reflagged with the stars and stripes, as they traveled through the Strait of Hormuz. From time to time, such vessels had been coming under fire during the so-called tanker war, itself part of the eight-year U.S.-backed Iraqi war against Iran of those years. The American response, Operation Earnest Will, offered an early model of what Secretary of State Pompeo is seeking to establish today with his Sentinel program. Operation Earnest Will was followed 2 years later by massive implementation of the Carter Doctrine, President Bush's 1990 decision to push Iraqi forces out of Kuwait. Although he spoke of the need to protect U.S. access to Persian Gulf oil fields, it was evident that ensuring a safe flow of oil imports wasn't the only motive for such military involvement. Look closely and you can find this principle lurking in every fundamental statement of U.S. policy related to that region and among Washington elite more generally. Originally, the key dependents in this strategic equation were Europe and Japan, which in return for a short access to West Asian oil were expected to subordinate themselves to Washington. Remember, for example, how they helped pay for Bush the Elder's Iraqi war-dubbed Operation Desert Storm. Today, however, many of those countries deeply concerned with the efforts of climate change are seeking to lessen oil's role in their national fuel mixes. As a result, in 2019, the countries potentially most at the mercy of Washington when it comes to access to Persian Gulf oil are economically fast expanding China and India, whose oil needs are only likely to grow. It means if the United States of America starts a war with Iran, you are unlikely to hear the word oil uttered by top Trump administration officials. But make no mistake, that three-letter word lies at the root of the present crisis, not to speak of the world's long-term fate.